Welcome to Nerds at Church, a queer feminist podcast diving deep into faith, nerdery, and the Bible. I'm Pastor Kay, and I use pronouns like she and her.
And I'm Pastor Emily, and my pronouns are they, them, theirs.
And I'm Emily Ann Garcia, and my pronouns are they, them, and she, her.
In this episode, we'll discuss astrology.
Woo-woo! Check out the episode description for links to any references we make in this episode.
So, as previously mentioned, we are diving deep into astrology today for our third episode in our fourth season, Epiphany. And we are super excited to have back friend of the podcast, Emily Ann Garcia, as our first guest this season. Emily is a Taurus Sun, Cancer Moon, and Scorpio Rising. They are also queer, brown, autistic, polyamorous, an artist, facilitator, thrift shop hero, and cat snuggler. Welcome.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
We're so glad to have you. Often, when we talk about astrology, we're talking about the Western zodiac system. And so let's start with that. How is a person's zodiac sign determined, and what does it mean?
Well, the thing that most people mean when they say zodiac sign or star sign is their sun sign, which is a piece of astrology and a piece of your, you know, entire zodiac scene, but is only a piece of it. But this is the sign that most people are most familiar with about themselves and is broadly defined just by the date of your birth. So anyone born in particular time ranges are a particular sign, and that's what shows up in, like, you know, newspaper astrology things that people are familiar with from back in the day that there were newspapers.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
Now there are apps for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say dating myself a little bit there, but cool.
Yeah. I mean, I used to always read the Sagittarius ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the basics of it.
So you've already hinted that the zodiac is more complicated than just one's sun sign. So what is a birth chart or natal chart? Like, this I know includes things like a rising sign and a bunch of other stuff. What is all that about? Emily wanted to point out the word retrograde seems to show up a lot.
Yeah. So taking the first part of that, a birth chart, a natal chart, they're referencing the same thing. And yes, it includes the rising sign, your moon sign. It includes lots of other pieces also. And it's basically articulating a map of what the sky looked like at the moment of your birth. So to get a full chart, you need your birth time and your birth location, because it starts getting pretty specific. There are some things like the sun sign, as we've mentioned before, that really only change approximately once a month. But there are ones that change a lot more often than that. The moon signs tend to change more closer to once a day, but the rising signs change once every 2 hours or so. And like all of that can really depend on where you are.
So the time of your birth doesn't have to be very precise. Like, my parents have a disagreement about the time that I was born, because my mom says that she was the one giving birth to me, and so she knows. And my dad says that he was the one wearing his glasses, and so he knows, because she wasn't wearing hers. And they're a minute off from each other. Hilarious. So, like, the difference of 1 minute shouldn't probably be a huge deal.
It probably shouldn't be a huge deal. You could put both things into any of the online things that will create one of these charts for you and see if it does, because like there's always a chance that that is the minute that like switches over from one thing to another thing. But most likely it won't.
Okay.
It's not.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And similarly, like the exact precise location thing also isn't, like, once you get to some level of precision, it's not going to be more precision than that is not needed. Like, usually just knowing the town that you were born in is
not the
more than enough.
Room.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, mine was Sagittarius. This is part of why Sagittarius apparently always resonated more with me, is I'm both Sagittarius rising and Sagittarius sun.
Yeah.
And Libra moon. And so I'm just very, very Sagittarius.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. But I was going to say the thing about the retrograde, which is, so retrograde is a term used when the movement of a planet relative to Earth appears to be moving backwards. It's not moving backwards. Everything is still working as it should, but it appears to be, and seems is the relevant part. And so lots of people feel that in times of retrograde are times that it feels like things are moving in a weird direction, that like ultimately it's all moving forward, but it may feel backward for a bit. And that can be especially true in areas of life that are believed to be influenced by particular planets. And so like people talk about Mercury going retrograde so often because it happens much more frequently than some of the other
close.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's, I don't remember exactly. I think it's like 3 times a year or something like that. 3 or 4 times a year. Ooh. And
Mercury is in retrograde.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like people talk about it. Like I know that in, you know, some parts of the cultural zeitgeist about this kind of thing, people talk about it as though it's like some like amazing, like, oh my God, this astrological event is happening. But it's like actually very commonplace and very mundane for it to be happening.
Now that I think about it, it kind of sounds like people talk about Mercury being in retrograde the way that Christian clergy talk about, well, it's Lent. Like, I can't be expected to care about that right now. Everything
and
else
you're like,
is
okay, but that happens all the time?
Like, yeah. Like, that's a solid Lent. 2 months
it's
of
Advent.
My life every year.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to think about birth charts and natal charts. And I was talking to a friend of the podcast, Susanna Porter, about this because she is also super into astrology. And she was talking about a couple things, but among them that like even places can have their own like star chart type thing. So like a country, like at the time, ancient Israel, could have a sign assigned to them. And when we think about the Magi, because we're in our like season 4 Epiphany season, and we think about the Magi following a star, there are a variety of different, like, theories about what that was.
Yeah,
right? Whether it was a comet, an asteroid, a supernova. And Susanna suggested, and I thought that this was really interesting, so I'm curious, like, what your thoughts would be on it, that if they were astrologers, like, they would know a fair amount about the sky and the stars and that sort of a thing. And so, like, following a comet or following an asteroid doesn't necessarily make as much sense because they would be used to those. Like, they would probably know that those happen in the same way. But if they are following a star, and if they're following, in particular, like, Venus is the one that she mentioned, that they, in astrology, like, if it's in a certain place, it means a certain thing. And kind of like what you're saying, right? Like if Mercury is in retrograde, if Venus is in this particular thing. And so I think Israel is Pisces, which is the fish sign.
Yeah.
But so like if Venus rested in Pisces, then that like would in astrology, like that's the kind of thing that like would mean something and would matter and not just like, oh, there's a supernova, there's a bright star. Of course, we're going to go to Jerusalem for, like, to go to Israel for the new king versus, like, oh, Venus is going into Pisces.
Yeah.
And so that's the, like, kind of precipitous reason to go, which I thought was really interesting and makes a lot more sense. Like, a lot of it is unknown, right? But,
sure,
like, would
course.
Make a lot more sense for why somebody would just, like, up and travel for who knows how long to go see this like toddler. but yeah, I was just curious what you think, because we don't like, we just call them magi and astrologers and we don't actually talk about like what that process even would have been like.
What that would have been for them. Yeah. I mean, I do think that's interesting. And I like the idea of the like places having their own, you know, identity and signs and like inclinations and like, my brain is going in like 14 different directions, so I'm trying to choose at least narrowing them down just a little bit. Yeah, I think that one of the things that's interesting about that sort of angle is wondering what is it for them that would have been motivating about any of those astrological events, and what, like, even aside from like necessarily what the meaning is overall, but like what is the calling that's in that, like it's a calling that's in a specific direction, which is also interesting. Like, yes, they might have been really familiar with different kinds of astrological events, like some of the other things you mentioned of comets and asteroids, whatever, but like I think those things also could have felt significant. Like it could have still been an indication that there was like something happening in a particular place, and it could have been some combination of a number of those things all happening together. And like, without knowing what the sort of like background system that was being used was, and like what kinds of, like what kinds of draws those systems created. Like I'm thinking also about just like when playing D&D and like, what are those story hooks? Like, what are the things that like are compelling that like create a story that you're like, I want to move towards that thing. And
which sometimes is like not the thing that the DM thinks.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Definitely not. I've DM'd too many campaigns, specifically one with you yourself, Emily Elizabeth Ewing.
I was going to say, I've been there.
But that's what DMs sign up for, though. Like, I would do that.
Absolutely.
But, like,
No, absolutely. That's exactly right. And similarly, like, you have to plan some amount of it, and then you have to just, like, follow what happens, just, like, let it happen. And so, yeah, I think it's also really interesting to think about, like, you know, a moment of like, knowing that there's, like, a significance happening, like, there's some kind of significant happening, and you have to choose and believe in the path that you're choosing to follow about that. Mm-hmm. And so there's so many pieces of that, of, like, why do you know something significant is happening right now? Is it because there's an astrological event happening, or is there some other way that the Holy Spirit is working to indicate that to you, whether it's through astrological happenings or something else? And then, like, how do you choose what map you're following in order to find it, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So, well, I have never personally taken astrology all that seriously. According to the usual charts, I am a Leo Virgo cusp, which I like to say just makes me complicated enough to be interesting. And I've noticed that description actually does fit me fairly well, at least from the sources that people seem to say are more accurate. And the thing that I've always wondered about is that, well, I have ADHD, and how does my ADHD play into that description? Because, like, is the description according to the Leo Virgo cusp thing, is that including the ADHD, or is that who I would be without it? Like, this is actually part of why I've never had any connection whatsoever to the Enneagram system, because my ADHD seems to throw that whole thing into absolute chaos, and none of the descriptions fit me because of it. So,
yeah. No, I mean, and I think that's true about a lot of people. I mean, you mentioned specifically the thing about there being some sources that people recommend over other sources. And with any of these kinds of things, like, whether it's astrology or tarot or any of this stuff, like, there's so much of it that depends on, like, who's writing the thing that you're reading, because there's always going to be a translation moment between the, like, shapes that somebody understands in relation to the astrology concepts and the way that they then translate that to trying to explain something to you, or trying to, like, make statements that are, like, broadly true about that thing. And, like, there's so much, I mean, we know this from all kinds of things related to biblical theory and stuff also, but, like, they're coming from a particular cultural situation that they're going to almost certainly, like, put into the description that they're making. And so, like, I find, like, a lot of the stuff that is really easy to find is written by straight white women who are, you know, US-centric capitalistic life scene, right? And so, like, even when they talk about, like, broad concepts about, like, what it means to the earth signs are often pointing to things about, like, the material substance of the world, but, like, a lot of those things will end up translating that kind of idea into things about, like, specifically about money and security, and like, that stuff doesn't resonate with me as a Taurus sun. Like, it's not, like, I'm not ambitious about money, but I am very particular about my, like, material circumstances. And that doesn't mean something exactly about how I, like, need to have a specific amount of money, or that, like, even the concepts of, like, luxury. Like, luxury for me isn't, like, spending $4 million redecorating my home. Like, that doesn't feel like luxury to me. But if you read stuff that's coming from a particular kind of perspective, they're going to really be focusing on that kind of thing. And then the whole description is going to fall apart for me. And so that's like a much sort of broader thing than the question that you're asking. But I think that, like, all of these things are written in ways that have some assumptions that they're making in the background, and I don't think that neurodivergence is one of the assumptions that most people are making. And so,
which is, like, a thing, because most of the people that I know that are into astrology are neurodivergent and queer of some variety.
And
so I'm like, no, but they're not the ones that are getting, like, the publicity and the, like, options.
Money.
And
Sure. I mean, that's really true. And, like, I'm going to try not to go down too many rabbit holes about all of this stuff.
We have time. You're good.
I have theories about why people who are neurodivergent and queer are really into this kind of stuff.
I want to know the theories.
Let me try to finish this sentence and then I can move back to that. But I do think that like so many of these things, whether it's Enneagram or whether you're looking at astrology or whether you're super into Myers-Briggs or you're into like whatever then they're still writing for like a wider audience. Like my life and my experience and my personality aren't going to be the exact same as everyone who is a Taurus sun, Cancer moon, Scorpio rising. Mm-hmm. Like that isn't fully definitional of like who I am. That can tell you some things, mm-hmm. but it doesn't tell you everything. And so like when you take that stuff and then put ADHD and autistic on top of it, that starts to tell you a little bit more. But then you also have to take my like queerness and my like racial identity and like all these other things that like start creating, like I really think of it as layers, as though you have like a bunch of like different transparencies with different information on them and you're like layering them. And so like you can see them.
Or like screen prints.
Yes, like screen prints, like an onion or like Shrek. But like you can see that they're all influencing each other. So like I would say that the ADHD thing and your astrological chart thing absolutely influence each other. And there's a lot of stuff that like is pointing to, like, if you look at a much broader picture of your whole chart, I really am going to try not to explain every little detail about this, but like there are ways that you can look at your chart and understand like why some kinds of things might have been more important to you and therefore affected you more about areas of your life. Like if you read a lot of fairly normie stuff about astrology, there'll be stuff in there that it can seem confusing. That's like, you might have had a parent who didn't attend to your emotional needs as a child or whatever, and you're like, how does my birth chart and the relationship of the stars to my person as a child mean something about who my parent was and what situation I found myself in that, right? And like, and I don't think it is particularly trying to say something about your parents. It's trying to say something about you, and that like you have a particular kind of emotional need that like is probably non-normative, or that probably like there was an aspect of your life that your parents weren't likely to understand. And so your needs, even though like for a bunch of different people it's going to show up in different ways, like there was probably a need that was likely to not get met when you were young.
Okay.
So that gets pretty deep into charts. So we probably won't get all of that. The thing I was going to say about the interest in astrology from a neurodivergent and queer perspective is that, okay, so as an autistic person, one of the things that is really useful to me, and that from my understanding is useful to most people who are neurodivergent, is trying to understand how to find themselves reflected in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's also true for queer people. It's not inherently the case that we're constantly seeing ourselves reflected in the world. And for people who are neurodivergent, it's often the case that there's some kinds of like interoception stuff. And, you know, some people will label it as alexithymia or something that means that you might have a harder time identifying and articulating the emotional shapes that are happening inside yourself, and not seeing yourself reflected in media and in the world broadly, like also exacerbates that particular thing. So if you're neurodivergent and queer, and like the longer your list gets of all the things that you are not normative about, so a few examples you are going to have encountered at various places in your life to see experiences like yours reflected. And so a way a lot of neurodivergent people learn to articulate what's happening for them is by observing a lot of other people doing that and then finding the thing that seems resonant with them. So like it's true for me that when I'm trying to figure out how to explain my experience of something, I often end up reading a lot of people's experiences of that same thing and then trying to figure out like, oh, I feel kind of this way, but also kind of this other way, and like sort of like piecemealing a story together that's like, okay, now this is what I feel like I can say and what I can own as my experience. And so like, yeah, I just think that really true for a lot of queer people and a lot of neurodivergent people, that astrology and some other systems like this that have like a lot of depth and complexity to them can offer a lot more pieces to like play with, to try to see yourself in, to try to identify, to try to like be able to piece together something that you're like, okay, this is how I can explain to people who I am.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Oh yeah? Does it?
Queer and neurodivergent.
Okay, so now I feel like I have to ask. So I am a Leo Virgo cusp. Emily has outed themselves rather enthusiastically as a Sagittarius. What would that mean about our relationship as co-podcasters?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean,
you can do that, right? You can do like a, people do it for like romantic relationships, right?
Oh yeah, but you can do it for non-romantic relationships, of course.
Yeah.
Does this say a lot about who we are as a podcast?
I mean, probably.
Sure.
And I think the main thing for me actually is that I would actually want to know more of your charts. Yeah. I mean, like, because obviously I don't know everything about how the two of you operate in the background, but I can say some general things that I would guess based on knowing those particular things about you. Okay. Sorry. You said August.
August 23rd.
So that puts you as Sun in Virgo, obviously cuspy. Moon in Pisces and rising in Aquarius. So,
I think my husband is Aquarius. Aquarius. That's interesting.
Mm, okay. Yes. Before I started dating Caitlin, every single person I dated was an Aquarius. Now I've switched to Scorpios. Anyway.
At least a Scorpio. Sure.
Yeah. Two.
Oh, cool.
I'm polyamorous, remember? Impressive. So I have.
Sure.
I have.
Yeah. Impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive. My dad is a Pisces.
Okay, so Sagittarius is a fire sign, and so that tends to be a lot of energy around like action orientedness and just like general enthusiasm in the ideas. Are you going to hand me those helpful books? Thank you.
Thank you to the mysterious person behind the scenes. There's no wizard behind the curtain.
Oh, yeah. That's hilarious. Okay. Oh, man. There's just so much information that's, like, in each of these, like, pieces of like, data. And it's just, like, so hard to choose, like, which pieces I'm going to, like, do. Anyway, Sagittarius is very big energy and, like, wants to, like, do a lot of stuff and have, like, adventure. And, like, probably, like, wanting to do everything at least one time to, like, at least just try it out. Like that kind of energy. And so I'll also take a moment to like distinguish also between what a sign and moon and rising signs are like supposed to like indicate.
Oh yeah.
Sure. Yeah. We haven't actually done that. So a sun sign is supposed to be like some information about, I don't know, who you are in some kind of core way, but the moon sign is about like your emotional world. And so I've found with a lot of people, your moon sign can determine to some extent how in your emotional world you are, but depending on like who you are as a person also overall, you might find that like your moon sign like says a lot more about you. And that for me was really true. Once I discovered my moon sign, I was like, oh, this all makes sense now. I get it. Anyway, and so that's the moon sign. And your rising sign is like a combination. People describe this really differently. And so to me, you can like find a way that it actually feels right for you, but that it's like, it has to do with like how people are going to perceive you likely from first impressions. Okay. And also like what kinds of things are driving your like momentum in your life, like how you achieve, like how you go. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and so for Emily Ewing, for your sun and your rising to be in Sagittarius, it means like that it's not unlikely that people don't have a particularly different first impression of you than they have of you once they get to know you a little bit more. Like obviously they learn more information about you, but like there's like an energy that's like pretty consistent about that. Whereas for me as a Scorpio rising and Taurus sun, like I'm definitely perceived generally by like fully new people as being a little bit more like standoffish and like mysterious and like maybe a little hostile.
I can see that.
Only if they deserve it, I'm sure.
I mean, and everyone does, let's be honest.
Sure.
But like once you actually know me at all, like the combination of the Taurus sun and the Cancer moon, I'm just like a big puddle of mush on the inside. I just like have like a little bit more of like a crust
gotta have a crust just to like protect the puddle.
Yeah, protect all the goo. Anyway, so that's part of that. So the sun in Sagittarius thing in the context of this, like, you know, the podcast question feels to me like it's like, you're going to bring a lot of enthusiasm and energy to the situation. And like, when something is good, you like want more, and we're going to like, just keep like galloping along with a lot of like fiery energy. Yeah. So, and there's like also some stuff about like interest in a particular kind of truth that goes along with that too. Mm. And like drive towards that. Like downsides, or the like, things to be cautious about in the Sagittarius world are about like probably being like rash and insensitive. Mm. And like, because there's like such an intense, like fiery, like, let's go do the adventure, let's go like do the thing or whatever. Sometimes that might go faster than other people are ready for.
Ooh. Wait, are we talking about the podcast or the church?
I'm just saying words. I'm not trying to apply this specifically.
I can hear myself now, and there's a certain tone of Emily, that I am very familiar with. That,
yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying no. I'm just saying, can we talk about these 18 things first?
Yes, yes, yes. That. I mean, and your Virgo is going to be all over that in a second. I'll get you in a moment. Don't worry. So on the K side, Sun in Virgo. Virgo is very practical earth energy, and you probably like think that you know the right way to do a thing, and honestly you probably do, but you're not that interested in learning other people's like ways of doing it, because you're like, no, my way is correct and we will do that.
Listen, I understand there are options. It's just that some of those options are wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very Virgo energy. But so, like, being really good at, like, practical skills and, like, actually, like, getting a thing done is very Virgo.
Which interacts with the ADHD in hilarious ways, by the way. But yes.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And ADHD can have a whole different, like, array of things that are happening in terms of, like, how people can get fixated on perfectionism, but like stacking with the Virgo thing can, I imagine that like sort of perfectionism.
I gave up perfectionism in seminary as a way of, you know, not wanting to do terrible things to myself. So
yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, I can 100% imagine how the combination of those things could really create a like very toxic inner world for yourself. Yeah. So, and I think that cuspy with Leo, like a lot of the Leo fire energy has to do with wanting a particular kind of attention, and like it can really get a bad rap from a lot of like very surface level astrology stuff that's like, oh, all Leos just want the spotlight on them all the time, and that's like exactly like the whole thing. But it's not exactly that. It's that like you want to be like recognized for the things that you're good at and appreciated for them in a particular kind of way. And so for some people that turns into a thing that's like almost performative and like, you know, really wanting to be in a particular kinds of spotlight. And some people are really content to not be in the spotlight, but they are like the structure undergirding the thing that's going well, and they would like to be appreciated for that. You know, they're not like necessarily as content to just like be in the background and not have anyone really notice.
I have occasionally thought of my Leo chunk of personality as my clergy persona. I can do the charismatic leader thing. You might not want me to at the time, depending on why I'm doing the charismatic leader thing. But yeah, it comes in handy here.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think the other piece of the Virgo thing is like, you can be really good at paying attention to detail, but sometimes that also then means you can lose track of the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Like,
or it doesn't mean that the detail I'm paying attention to is the one that matters. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Anyway, that didn't say a lot exactly about how the two of you work together on the podcast specifically, but like my guess is that the main energies that are coming up in that thing is Emily having a lot of like energy and ideas and wanting to do a lot of things, and Kay doing a lot of like detail oriented like management of making sure things actually happen.
Like editing the audio of the podcast, example.
But actually, come to think of it, the reason why this podcast now exists is because Emily got an idea and wanted to find someone who was on board to do that idea with.
It's really true. Yeah. It's really true. It was from a clergy Facebook group. Yeah.
And when we realized that we wanted to change formats, because I love the lectionary, but we were so done with the lectionary. When we realized we wanted to change formats, we both threw out ideas for how we could organize seasons. And Emily was like the canon of ideas, basically. And then I was the one of, okay, so we could combine like these three things by saying Epiphany, or we could do this, or we could, and trying to sort those things into practical.
Yeah. Kay is the one who ultimately came up with Epiphany for season four, and then we just kept throwing things into it.
That's hilarious. Yeah, so interesting. Like, I'm just looking at the rest of your chart that we're definitely not gonna, you know, go into like all of it or whatever, but you do have a lot of Virgo and a lot of Sagittarius actually, like other places in your chart too.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
The Virgo, I think, is probably the strongest that you would like particularly notice, but yeah. And you're so mutable also. That's so interesting. I'm like so fixed. I'm like fascinated when people are mutable. I mean, I guess Emily, you're also fairly mutable.
Okay. Now you have to tell me what mutable means.
Yeah. So the signs like break down into like different groups, right? Like, you know, that they mm-hmm. like have elements that they're associated with. So your Sagittarius is a fire sign. But they also break down into modalities, and the modalities are cardinal, fixed, and mutable. And they have to do with like where a sign is in the relative placement in their season. So like Aries is the first sign in the astrology wheel or whatever in the year. And that's a cardinal sign because it's the very beginning of spring. And then Taurus is a fixed sign, being like right in the middle of spring, and Gemini is the mutable sign, which is like sort of ushering out spring, going to a new season. And so
I'm super mutable because Sagittarius like goes out to winter.
Yeah, you're the, like the transition to winter. And like, so there's a bunch of different ways of like looking at the particular thing and how that plays out in your chart about various things. But generally, like cardinal energy is going to be a like starting a new thing energy that's going to be like, we are here and let's go, let's start. And a fixed energy is like, I would like to stay where we are and like stabilize what's happening here.
Sure.
And the mutable energy is generally going to be like more willing to like release and like move on to the next thing.
So does this mean that it makes sense that I'm better at transitions than Emily is? If I'm more mutable?
I'm terrible at transitions. Also because I'm too envy to transition.
I mean, there's also going to be lots of autism stuff in there and blah, 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 too. And if you look at this specific, so there's the way that breaks down is that there's like one cardinal fire sign, there's one fixed fire sign, there's one mutable fire sign.
Oh, and before we move on to the next thing, you said that you were consulting a book while you were talking to us about this. Would you like to share what that book is? Oh, yeah.
Yes, I have two books that I often use. One is more like, you know, specifically reputable than the other one.
But yeah.
One that's like very popular right now, and lots of people who are into astrology will know this person, is You Were Born for This by Chani Nicholas. And the subtitle is Astrology for Radical Self-Acceptance. And I think overall it's like quite good at walking you through a bunch of different aspects of your chart and helping you understand the ways in which they influence each other and you, and their values perspective is going to be higher than some other content. So it's like much more modern. And the other one that I use sometimes is this one that is called Astrology by Carol Taylor. And I find it really useful because it has a lot more like really specific explanation about like what all the words mean about all the different things, like the modality thing that I was explaining. Like, this book helped me understand that a lot more than some of the other ones, and it's like almost a little more sciencey or something in terms of like explaining what the actual movements that are happening are that lead to the words that people will say at you about astrology.
Sure.
Interesting.
And it has a lot of like really helpful charts and stuff in it, which also is helpful to me as like more of a visual learner of like actually looking at how to actually think about the cool spatial map of what's happening.
Yeah.
Mm. There was a natural transition to this question, and then we took our deep dive into the star charts of Kay, me, and the podcast. So, astrology, we were talking about, you know, the neurodivergent, queer, which, like, those kind of particularities of why people are interested in astrology. And I feel like this is kind of the flip side question of that astrology frequently gets dismissed in what feels like, to me, at minimum, a misogynistic dismissing of it. And I'm curious, as particularly a person of color and a queer person of color, how you experience and engage with astrology and the pushback against it and that sort of a thing. And you kind of talked about it, but I feel like there's
more. Oh, there's more. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I've always been somewhat interested in astrology, but for a while I didn't exactly see myself in it enough. Like, I, you know, when it was like just my sun sign and I was reading, you know, the Cosmo horoscopes or whatever, you know, I was like, okay, well, I like kind of get this, but also it feels like it's like missing some part of me, especially because there's a lot of things about Taurus that are really true about me, but like it really has a flavor of being very like reliable and practical, like a lot of earth signs do. And it doesn't explain the like intensity of my emotion. And so it wasn't until I learned more and there was enough cultural pushback about it just like being a, you know, trash science thing in the ways that you're saying about a misogynistic dismissing of it. That's also racist.
Yeah.
That I just like didn't really learn more. And part of that, you know, being autistic and masking and trying to figure out what's like acceptable to like and blah blah blah, yeah, etc. But like two things ended up changing it for me, and one is that there's a podcast called Ansel Doing It.
Love the name of that podcast.
Yeah. It's a great podcast. I don't think they're actively still making episodes, which is sad, but there is quite a good backlog that you can listen through. That it's queer Latinx academics from, I think, from Southern California, who discuss a whole variety of topics, but astrology is one of the things that they consistently like circle back to. And I found it really interesting how they talked about astrology. And one of the things that they talked about is the way in which it like is in a lot of cultures of like sort of repository for a way of knowing things that like, you know, a white dominated society dismissed and like tried to destroy. And like, it's a place that real ways of knowing things could be put in order to try to preserve them. And once they said that, I hadn't thought about a lot of things about this kind of thing before, but I hadn't really thought about it, about astrology and the ways in which, like, of course, the way that like Western white male dominated society was going to be about it was going to be to try to destroy and dismiss and belittle it, because it's not the like Western model of science that is so, you know, upheld as like the only way to like know things.
Despite the fact that it took them like 11 years to figure out that there's a lizard species that only has one sex.
Yes.
Because they just thought it was impossible for lizards to not have males of a species. Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, like, and so realizing that, I'm like, oh, okay. So like probably there is more here than I was led to believe, as is so true about so many things that I was led to believe. And so then that gave me like more permission in myself to like seek out more information. And so then once I actually like learned a broader reality of like what my whole chart was, it suddenly like clicked so much more for me. I was like, I remember as a child being like actively resentful that I wasn't a water sign, because I was like, I don't understand why I'm not a water sign. Like, I want to be a water sign. All I feel in my entire life is water, and I feel so connected to water. I like felt so like betrayed that I was not a water sign. But then I learned that basically the entire rest of my chart is water. So, and I was like, oh, okay.
That explains it.
And specifically because my moon sign is Cancer, one of the things that people will say about Cancer moons is that, so each of the signs also has like a ruling planet, and so sometimes like if the ruling planet and the sign match up for you, that tends to be a like really strong pull in your chart. And so a lot of people that have Cancer moons, because Cancer is ruled by the moon or vice versa, I don't remember exactly how people phrase that, but because those things are so connected, a lot of people that have Cancer moons actually resonate a lot more with descriptions of their moon sign than they do with their sun sign.
I've heard similar things sometimes about rising signs too, right? Like sometimes people's rising sign is the one that like makes the most sense.
Yeah, and it's so much of that depends on like how you were raised. And there's so much also about like masking and like how much your own self-image is based on how other people perceive you versus based on your own internal landscape.
Yeah.
And like my internal landscape is just so strong that I needed that to be part of any system that was going to try to tell me anything about myself. Yeah, so there's a lot of overlap between a Cancer moon and a Taurus sun in terms of like both of them are going to really like coziness, for example. And I'm very into coziness. And so that can be explained by the Taurus sun, but also once you pair it with the Cancer moon, it's like, oh yeah, she probably has a lot of blankets. And it's true. I do. I have a lot of blankets.
Like, I mean, blankets are like the coziest.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Anyway, but so being able to learn that and then like figure out what all those other pieces of the chart were that like just add so much more interest and nuance to the whole system, like made much more sense. And because it's become so much more popular in mainstream culture, it just like means that there's a lot more resources now that you can like turn to look at stuff. And then in terms of the experiencing pushback, I definitely am familiar with that. If it feels like the message that's coming at me is basically a message from a white man, I'm like, whether it's actually coming out of the mouth of a white man or not, I'm like, nah,
it's yeah,
I don't care. This is not. Yeah. And depending on who that is coming from, I might actually say stuff about it. And most of the time I don't care enough to say anything about it. I'm just like, cool. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'm going to do a different thing instead.
Yeah. That tracks.
And then like, the other, if I'm actually like willing to talk to somebody about it, the thing that I point to, and this is also true again about like tarot or something, is like lots of people in lots of times in the world have used different systems as ways of knowing themselves and of ways of like trying to know things about the world around them. And like having a system that offers you some content that you can then bounce around in and try to like understand from different angles is like universally useful. I'm not saying that astrology specifically is universally useful to everyone, but like conceptually that thing is useful. And that's true about how we approach things about the Bible, for example. Like, you know, it's like it's a lot of content that has given a lot of people a lot of ways to bounce around in and try to understand things in different ways from different angles and trying to like interpret and reinterpret and like, well, what does this say about this moment in my life and who am I in this story? And like all of those kinds of things are like things that people reach for all the time to try to understand themselves and understand the world and understand the like larger cosmic implications of happenings, you know? And astrology is another thing that you can do that with, and there's enough like sort of content and realness and like pieces of truth that are contained in it that it like can be really actively useful to explore.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And you and I had a conversation about this quite possibly a decade ago or somewhere near there, but the reality of we have all these different ways that help us understand the world and explore the world. And like, we just, our first episode for this season was on cosmologies, right? That kind of gets at that too, of what is the frame within which we get to bounce around and sometimes like bounce out and bounce back in and all of that stuff. But
yeah. Sure. So we are nerds at church, so it is time to talk about astrology in pop culture. And one of the first things I thought of was there is an episode of The Orville, which I have not seen all the seasons of, but I have seen the first two seasons of Orville. And in season 2, episode 5, which is called All the World is Birthday Cake, the ship is visiting a planet where everyone who is born under a certain sign, I don't honestly remember what it was called, was locked up because that sign was believed to be naturally violent. And so instead of encouraging those folks to, say, I don't know, join the military, they decided that all of those people were probably going to turn into criminals and locked them up, and also did slightly horrifying things like having C-sections early for pregnant people so that they would avoid being technically born under that sign, that sort of thing.
Yeah, like send them to,
and then if those people had children in the place where they were locked up and those children were not under that sign, those children were taken from them. Yeah,
that sounds terrible. That's a decided dystopia. Not
to use astrology 101. Yep.
I'm actually currently reading a book. I'm reading the audiobook, and it's one of the queer romance novels, and it's called Count Your Lucky Stars by Alexandria Bellaflor. And one of the main characters is really into astrology, and she teamed up with this dating website to help them incorporate astrological signs for compatibilities between people. And then also her best friend and the website guy, like, fell in love, and so they're getting married, and it's that whole thing. But it's really interesting because she also, like, creates content around astrology, and so is like, the best cake for these signs, or the best thing to watch with your roommate, is this sign.
Sure.
And it's interesting because, like, I'll listen to it and then, like, think about if that is true for me as a Sagittarius. They don't pan out particularly well, but I mean, I've only heard a couple.
And is there such a thing as bad
sometimes
cake?
That's how it is. So, I mean, yes.
Okay, that's fair.
Yes, there is. Actually, yeah. I've had it. It's
bad. Okay, that's...
When it's bad, it's bad.
Yeah, okay.
But also, I can't do coconut texture, so...
Yeah. I like, can't blame you for that one.
Extra complications.
The only time I can stand any coconut whatsoever is in German chocolate cake frosting.
Yeah, nope.
And then, of course, in Terry Pratchett's Discworld series, astrology is actually a cutting-edge science and extra difficult because the Discworld, which is, you know, a flat disk instead of being a globe like our planet, is not orbiting a star, but is instead traveling through the universe on the backs of four elephants on top of the Great Atwin, a giant star turtle, with its sun traveling sort of with it, but going in a very strange path of loops and whirls and such, in order to make day and night and, like, the seasons work for the Discworld. And so all of the constellations are on the zodiac because of how the disc is traveling the universe. And also the zodiac is constantly changing because the disc keeps moving. And so calculating astrology is something that only the very highest level and most talented wizards and magic people can do because it takes so much extra work.
Interesting. The first thing that came to mind for me was Battlestar Galactica, the show, because the names of, like, the planets are almost the signs. So there's a planet called Caprica instead of Capricorn, which connects canonically to the universe because the, like, idea is that they existed with really advanced technology, like, forever ago, and then were, like, searching for and eventually found Earth a couple thousand years ago and incorporated into earthly life at that point. And so then it makes sense that from Caprica would become the sign that we call Capricorn and that sort of a thing. But it's not as much like constellation astrology as the names of the signs.
Yes. And then a movie that I have just found a lot of joy in over the years is called Jupiter Ascending. And that one actually starts off with the main character of the movie introducing herself through her astrological chart, because she does not actually have a culture exactly to call her own because she was not born in a country. She was born on a ship. And so she chooses to understand herself through her astrological system because that's the system that her aunt was able to give her and how she was able to understand herself from the start, which was a nice way of handling it.
And so one of the things that frequently gets brought up in a lot of Christian circles, particularly more conservative ones, I think, but like a lot of people who are Christians are like, and I think they do it with tarot too, where there's this like, but what about the Bible? Like, isn't that against the Bible? Or what does the Bible say about astrology?
I mean, I think
and those sorts of
looking
things
at the Bible is probably a very Christian thing to do. Sure.
Yes. But I think because of the dominance of like conservative Christianity in our culture, there's this like push towards assumptions about what the Bible might have to say about things that are not always based in fact. And so we did a little bit of diving into some of the scripture that you could use to like maybe think about this.
Yeah, this is not an exhaustive list. We do not have time for that.
And it gets repetitive to a certain extent.
Oh, yeah.
One thing to know is like the way we experience astrology today is not the same as astrology 2,000 years ago.
Absolutely.
4,000 years ago. Any of that. But With that being said, we kind of decided to pick three different scriptures that kind of give very different perspectives on it. So the first passage that we looked at was Genesis chapter 1, verses 14 to 15, which I love those two verses because it's from the Genesis 1 passage and God creating the whole cosmos and saying, "Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons," like this sense of like lights that guide. And yeah, so that's our first one to talk about. I love this passage.
Yeah. And as these verses say, we do measure days and years and seasons by the sun and moon, which are the great lights in the sky, which gets more specific a couple of verses later, I think. But I admit that I don't think I had noticed the fact that there's the word signs in there before. And so I looked into the Hebrew word that is translated as signs here, which Emily helpfully informed me is pronounced ot. That word in Hebrew is most commonly translated into English as sign by a large margin, but it can also mean an omen or a distinguishing mark, basically.
Yeah, which tracks. And so I think that's like a great starting place when we think about astrology and scripture or Christianity, that like the initial thing is like, these are supposed to be signs. These are supposed to be ways that we make sense of the world, the cosmos.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's such an interesting thing whenever people get into a thing of like, oh, well, is this thing in the Bible? Does that mean it's like against God or something? And I find it like such a strange argument because I'm like, there's just so many ways that we know things. And I don't understand why like some of them have been deemed acceptable and some of them have been deemed not acceptable based on what exactly. And just like, I don't think that like evolution is a concept that is incompatible with like a biblical based belief system or something like that. I also don't think astrology is, you know, and I think that like, you know, humans want to understand things about themselves and the world around us, and finding ways to do that that are like resonant with our experiences, especially ones that aren't like, you know, fundamentally oppressing other people, like are interesting and good and don't in any way inherently feel to me like they're going to be like against, you know, Christian faith or something.
Yeah. And we talked about that some in our cosmology episode too, of that particularly like what scripture says about the creation of the universe and the organization of the cosmos and science, and they're not necessarily supposed to be answering all of the same things. And sometimes we get the incorrect message that the Bible is supposed to be the how-to manual for everything.
Oh no,
when it's not.
Well, and I think that also points out an interesting piece about like what people use like the different things for or whatever, and like the ways in which like, you know, a significant limit of an astrology based under like self-understanding or something, like most astrology content isn't necessarily like giving you a framework or a structure for like a value system, or it's not saying you should care about the poor people in your neighborhood, you know, like it's not trying to make a case like that. But just to some extent, I'm curious about the ways in which that just goes back to like the interpretation that whoever is writing the thing is doing, and what, you know, more work in that area actually could offer as part of like, you know, suggestions for like how to seek justice in the world based on like what things exist in your chart, as opposed to just being like, oh, this sign means that you probably care more about that than this other sign or something.
So our other passage, partly because we think that if we don't use a passage from this particular book of the Bible, people will be like, what about Leviticus? Yes, we're talking about Leviticus.
We read Leviticus too.
First off, we do. There's a lot of great stuff in Leviticus, there's a lot of hard stuff, and there's a lot of complicated stuff. So we are looking at Leviticus chapter 19, verses 23 through 28. Part of why we're looking at this many verses is to help give us some context of verse 26, which is the one that is commonly used, kind of locates itself within the larger context of Leviticus holiness codes. And so those are codes that were developed a very, very long time ago when we didn't know about a lot of things around cleanliness and disease and all of those sorts of things. So sure. Holiness codes have lots of combinations of like religious reasonings and stuff, but also have like practical things of, there's a verse in Deuteronomy we used to read every hike day at camp about going so far outside of the camp to dig a hole to poop in, right? Like yep. There's a lot of different things about what it meant to live safely. Yeah. And so, yeah, so we wanted to look at this chapter of Leviticus 19 for some context. I'm particularly fond of verse 28, which says, "You shall not make any gashes in your flesh for the dead or tattoo any marks upon you. I am the becoming one." I have 3 tattoos. So just throwing that out there along with 4? The not practicing augury or witchcraft. Sure. Yeah.
I have plans for 3 myself, but I haven't managed to afford them yet. So as we read these verses, the first few verses, which give some context to verse 26, which is sort of the center of what we're talking about. The first few verses are about waiting for a tree to properly grow to maturity before demanding that it produce fruit. And specifically, it says after waiting for 3 years, the 4th year that the tree grows, the fruit will be given to God. And that gives an extra year of grace where folks won't be depending on that fruit for their food supply, which if you're living in the ancient world in an agricultural system, having a little extra space of let's not depend on this quite yet can save lives, right? And then we get into this verse about don't use augury and witchcraft. Well, I can only imagine how the practice of augury and witchcraft mixed in with farming might end badly in the ancient world when they didn't understand how some of these things worked, such as crop science and weather and so forth. And so if you think you can predict anything with farming, even today, and you base your food supply expectations off those predictions, things can still get ugly very fast. And so I looked into the Hebrew of these two words, augury and witchcraft. As far as I'm aware, the word augury in English is usually about using birds and specifically bird bones to make predictions. The word in Hebrew here is tenach asu. I'm not entirely sure that that connotation about the birds is also present in Hebrew. It's essentially just about predictions and divination. And the word that is translated here as witchcraft in Hebrew is te'onenu. And this is a broader term covering not just predictions, but also conjuring and general magic. And I mean, while we're talking about safety in the ancient world, gashing your flesh in the ancient world, or for that matter, tattooing, would be super dangerous and a great way to get infected with really terrible things. And so I can see why they said don't do that.
I am a little bit confused about the not rounding off the hair on your temples or marring the edge of your beard. But maybe the, like, blade just gets a little too close.
Possibly, or I tend to also think of the holiness codes as a way for the Jewish people to distinguish themselves from their neighbors as being different and separate. And so that could also just fall under that category.
It's almost like one of the meanings of holy is set apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird.
Yeah. I also just don't, you know, like, I think it's so specific to, like, what, you know, time and place and everything that's going around about like what do you call what is witchcraft?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you make a distinct bucket that is witchcraft? Like if you just like look at a dictionary right now, it's like mostly something about being connected to nature. And you're like, okay, but like is being connected to nature against God? Because that doesn't sound like,
sure
like what like, the thing is.
Yeah.
So what exactly is the thing that's happening that is a problem in that context?
That's what I was thinking about this too, and like that's part of how we pared down a lot of the verses was this is so vague, we don't even know how they meant it then, how we mean it now. Yeah, augury too, I had to look up in the dictionary because I was like, I don't actually know what that is,
right? And like what is considered witchcraft versus like what is considered a miracle, or how are you determining the distinction between those things?
And speaking of which, I think that takes us right into our next passage. Yeah.
So our next passage is from the book of Daniel, chapter 2, verses 1 through 19, and chapter 4, verses 1 through 9, because they both kind of deal with a similar thing. King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and it confuses and disturbs him. And so he, like, decides that all of the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and the Chaldeans were summoned to like figure out what was going on. But Nebuchadnezzar had an extra level of like, I'm not going to tell you the dream, but I want you to tell me the dream that I had and interpret it. And so they're all like, that's impossible. Because like, what? Yeah. So I'm like with them.
There's a note in there that King Nebuchadnezzar believed that his magical people had made an agreement with each other to lie to him until things generally got better. And so that may have been why he was doing this.
I mean, I suppose. But so then they're like, we can't do that. That's not possible. And so then he says, well, then we're just going to destroy you.
Yeah.
And that's not something, that's a common thing that Nebuchadnezzar likes to do, as we
murder bad.
Also know from Daniel chapter 3, mm-hmm. right? But yeah, murder bad. And so then according to this story, Daniel would actually be considered a magician. And Daniel calls them the wise men of Babylon. But Daniel relies on God for knowing the dream and its interpretation and gives God credit for it. And also, like you were saying, Emily, is it magic or is it a miracle? Because he's doing the thing that Nebuchadnezzar is asking the magicians to do. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
I mean, it's happening now, and it's as close as your podcast provider, so...
Two queer, trans, non-binary podcast co-hosts set out to cover the most amazing franchise of all time.
I mean, is it the most amazing, though? We've already covered so many great ones, like A Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Twilight, Ghostbusters...
First off, Twilight was not... amazing, even if our episodes about it were. Secondly, Star Wars is the most amazing because it has droids and Leia and sci-fi and action and R2-D2 and BB-8.
Okay. It's up there. I'll give that to you. That's not for debate. But we're not just covering Star Wars this season. We're also covering the Alien franchise, which is also amazing because it has Ripley and sci-fi and aliens and horror and...
Details. I'm Pastor Emily, and I am the droid in the background. Never noticed, never wiped of memory, always watching.
That's a little creepy. And I'm Pace Warfield, and I am the... awesome yellow loading machine that Ripley uses in the Alien franchise to beat up things.
Totally. And we're the hosts of Horror Nerds at Church, a ridiculously queer podcast with a horror Padawan.
And a horror nerd buff, all the things, horror master.
There we go.
Each season we follow a horror franchise or horror adjacent and a host of other horror and horror adjacent movies to talk about how they connect to queerness, religion, and theology.
We feature bona fide scary movies like Halloween, The Witch, Candyman, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Suspiria.
But we've also covered non-scary movies or low-stakes horror movies like Ghostbusters, The Addams Family, Doctor Strange, Hocus Pocus.
Our upcoming season, we are covering a galaxy far, far away by looking at the Star Wars and Alien franchises from queer, religious, and horror perspectives.
Tune in this season because we talk about whether or not all droids go to heaven.
They absolutely do.
Whether the Jedi are cops or religious movement.
They're both.
And whether or not Han Solo shot first.
He definitely did. We also dive into the Trinitarian aspects of all things Force, look at the false binary of light and darkness, especially as it relates to the Force, examine Star Wars from a horror perspective, and interview amazing guests like Claudia Gray, author of many Star Wars novels, horror author Ben Monroe, who interned at Lucasfilms, and many more.
And for you true blue horror fans like me, don't worry. We're also covering the Alien franchise and looking at how that franchise might be one of the greatest slasher franchises of all time. The weird and convoluted theology of the movie Prometheus, and how much of an amazing character Ripley is.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you catch your podcasts.
Now it is time for our Muppets moment. And so our question for this week is, which Muppet would be what astrological sign? Emily Ann, do you have any thoughts on this about assigning the Muppets some astrological signs?
So I do have some thoughts, but with the caveat that, like, I don't know the Muppets that well, and they haven't been, like, a major fandom of mine or anything. Yes, so I think, like, Miss Piggy was one of the ones that I was really interested in, like, thinking through a little bit. I think that there's, like, a lot of her energy that people would, like, be very quick to assign to a Leo kind of vibe because of the sort of, like, attention-y, kind of like I want the spotlight on me kind of vibe that she has. And I would guess that she has like pretty strong Leo placements because of that. But I think that she's more of a Taurus, really, like because she's like into this particular kind of like luxury, and she's like stubborn and jealous, and those are things that are often really part of a like a Taurus thing. And so that's my guess, probably a Taurus with like some strong Leo placements. But I could see an argument for the opposite, it being a Leo with strong Taurus placements. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's one that feels interesting to me. I mentioned Aries just a moment ago, and I think that Animal as an Aries is
I was hoping that we would figure out Animals.
Yeah. Like just that sort of like fiery energy, and like you know that people have like gotten on Animal's bad side and then regretted it. There are other signs that you would also regret it, like, but like Scorpio is like much more of a like, you know, planned vengefulness almost kind of energy.
Yeah.
Salt the earth.
And the Aries, yeah, and the energy of like more of an Aries is going to be like quick fiery anger that will consume everything right now immediately and then be over. And that feels like a very like Animal vibe to me.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a couple of them. I like spent a little bit of time thinking about Kermit, and I even like looked up some things, like, because of course people have written about this and given their own interpretations to things. So I was like, you know, using that a little bit to bounce around about some things anyway, but like, I couldn't really land for Kermit. Like the things that I saw were mostly having him be either a Libra or a Cancer. And I can sort of see both of those things, but they don't quite line up exactly right for me. I think Gonzo is an Aquarius.
I really wanted you to cast a Gonzo. I was like, we have to talk about Gonzo because, yeah, Gonzo as Aquarius. Interesting.
Yeah, because I think that it's that kind of like taking pride in weirdness kind of vibe, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Very Corporal Klinger from MASH. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I was thinking about Fozzie as like a Sagittarius, just like big, bright energy and like really excited and hopeful about the world, which I think is kind of the energy that people think I give off. So I was like, maybe Fozzie is a Sagittarius.
Sure.
And then I was thinking about Scooter as maybe a Virgo, like very like organized and orderly with the things and the processes and keeping the show together.
Yeah. I love that we're all assigning our own signs to puppets because that's also where I went. I totally came up with Scooter as a Virgo. Thank you, Emily. You're totally right. And also, okay, I have to go there. To piggyback off something Emily Ann said earlier regarding Miss Piggy.
Is it about Miss Piggy? Yes. Yeah.
I kind of thought about her and Janice as two of the options for how Leo can play out, because both of them are very good at being the center of attention, and I also tend to think of Leo as an ability to hold people's attention, and they have a very different style of doing that. Miss Piggy is a little more just outright demanding it, whereas Janice has a natural magnetism, and so I thought of them as two of the options for how Leo can look and appear in the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I think of Janice as, like, again, I don't know all of the characters super well, but I think of Janice as, like, sort of dreamier than I think of Leo as, which would maybe imply maybe some Pisces energy there or something. So Miss Piggy is sort of doing a Taurus Leo combo, and Janice is doing more of a Leo Pisces combo. That could, you know, be an interesting way of viewing that.
Yeah, that works. I like this. Yeah. I like all of these. So, Emily, any other thoughts on life, the universe, and everything?
Oh my gosh. I mean, so many. There's just so much. Like, if anyone listens to this and is interested in, like, getting into astrology, the thing that I would, like, encourage people to do is to not try to learn everything immediately. Because there's just so many pieces of all the parts of it. And I know when I first started looking at it, it was both a little bit overwhelming, and I was like, okay, I just have to understand the relationship between, like, 18 different factors all converging about this one thing, and if I can just understand that, you know? And I've been now doing this for many years, and I'm still finding pieces of it where I'm like, oh, okay, now this is actually kind of clicking a little bit more and making me, like, be able to, you know, understand aspects of it. So, you know, just have, you know, some amount of, like, humility and respect for how, like, complex and rich a lot of it is once you, like, dig into it. Yeah, anyway.
Out of curiosity, would you have a website for casting a natal chart that you would recommend to people?
Especially if it's free.
Yeah, no, there are definitely lots of free ones online. The two that I tend to use are Astrolab and the Chani Nicholas site. They both present the information in a little bit of a different way, and so I appreciate being able to look at both. I think the, like, Astrolab one is going to look a little bit more like what you sort of would expect it to look like, or, I don't know, seems more straightforward in some ways. And the Chani Nicholas site really is, like, diving into a lot more of the, like, complexities about the, like, houses that the signs are in and things like that, in a way that, like, I find her descriptions to be more in line with my, like, own understanding of the world and, like, the lens I use to view the world or something, but also to be a lot more complex. And so it can be a little bit of an intimidating place to start. Also, she has an app. It only works on iPhones, and you have to pay for it to get most of the content. Ooh, for, like, beyond, you can just, like, get your straight up, you can just get your chart, and that's easy enough, but like, more content from her, there's a paywall pretty quickly, and there's just so much content that you can access without a paywall. Yeah, it's just definitely not the place to start, really.
Yeah, and we'll link to both of those in our episode description for folks who are interested.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks for joining us, Emily Ann. We are so glad you could be with us today. And thank you to our wonderful listeners for joining us, too. Our theme music was by Rachel Meyer Lachlan. Our Muppets music was by Brenda Boss. And our seasonal artwork was by Pace Warfield. Catch us next time when we'll dive into our solar system. Mm-hmm. Not, like, you know, into space. We're not going to suffocate ourselves, but we'll talk about the solar system. Like, that makes more sense.
Yeah, but let us know what you think and feel about Pluto.
Sure, absolutely. And this podcast has been produced by us, Kay Roloff and Emily Ewing. For more fun, check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and Blue Sky at Nerds at Church, or contact us at nerdsatchurch@gmail.com.
Also, if you like what you've heard, rate us or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you want access to our uncut episodes, of which this will definitely be one, merch discounts, movie commentaries, and more, support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdsatchurch. Starting at just $5 per month, it is cheaper than becoming an expert in astrology.
Yeah.
That it is.
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure it's cheaper than any of those books.
Also, let us know on Blue Sky, Facebook, or Twitter which Muppet it belongs to which astrological sign.
As the ancient Christian said,
Pax vobiscum.